You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com, brought to you also by The Green Room, which is where we are on this fine Monday. I'm Andrew Wiebe, with me, as always, David Goss, and as always on Mondays now, Matt Doyle. How do you feel about being, I'm not going to say a situational sub, Doyle, but you are, I guess you are a starter, and Bobby would be more of the situational sub.
I think we
sub.
Just have a rotation, right? Mm-hmm. A little bit more flair on Mondays, and I think a little bit more pragmatic on Thursdays.
Hold on, you think that?
It's away home game situation, right? Like you play Doyle in the home game when you need to, like, build up the score line.
I'm Drogba with Phoenix Rising, man.
Yeah, exactly. And then Bobby comes in the away leg when you're going to drop five in the midfield and play, you know, park the
can
bus.
Can we go back to that? Bobby being the organizational guy and you being the flair player? I mean, Bobby is like the – he's the guy who's, you know, to quote Bruce Arena on Clint Dempsey, try and spit.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he is. He's got crazy takes, man. That's our mailbag is full of it all the time. Things
They're
that he says
takes.
That
people
– Really?
Yeah, okay. It's just him always pondering the world as it exists.
And this is the thing about Bobby, and it's the same thing about Simon back in the – like, people think that these guys are offering takes just to get a rise out of the people. Bobby believes 100% everything that comes out of his
mouth.
He's
the most earnest commentator in Major League Soccer.
Other than maybe Simon. Simon believes everything that he says.
He's the most current – moderator of that nature in Major League.
Yeah, except because Simon just said to me, like, literally 15 minutes ago, you know, out of sight, out of mind is what I always say. And you just put him out of mind because he's out of sight.
I think there's what he's trying to be. Big show coming up for you here. MLS Week 3 with Sam Stachkal. We've got some video review drama to talk about and, of course, some big results. U.S. national team's roster for that friendly against Paraguay is out. We'll talk about that. It is young. Very, very young. And Doyle, I'm sure, has some thoughts there. Ben Bear will join us for the mailbag, and we'll do all of this in somewhere around an hour because we just were out of our minds last Thursday with Bobby, and we just went for 2 hours. So we apologize for that. Shout out to Trey
Durst.
It was very
Manchester United-like showing, plodding along.
No actual goals, not a lot of flair, just kind of, you know.
Now we've got Doyle.
We've got a flair player here. Shout out to Trey Durst. So he listened to the conversation about the ETR nanny position. Of course, I'm looking for a nanny in Brooklyn, and he said his girlfriend might be interested in this position. So if things don't work out, the interviews we already did, we may be reaching out to Trey.
Shout out to Jaziel, by the way.
Who?
Met him at Stans. Good dude. Ben was very excited to be noticed by a fan.
Wait, was Ben noticed or were you noticed?
No, I was noticed, but I'm very quick. Like, if you come up to me and you're like, dude, big fan of the show, obviously first answer is like, I just take it game by game.
Right.
Second answer is like, I wouldn't do it if it wasn't for my team. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Ben Bear, Matt Doyle, and Andrew.
And what does Ben say? Doesn't get recognized.
Ben goes, well, you were with him at a Red Bull game where he got recognized, or like wasn't sort of, and they were making him give Baron tees. And he's like, I wish this wasn't happening. It's like, Ben, you walked over
you're
here.
You're glowing. I guess you're vibrant with the energy you have right now. We will surely shout out to Ben in the mailbag and put him to task over this one. Let's talk MLS, guys. Let's get right into it. I'm going to start with Sunday. Just one game. Dallas, Seattle, 3-0 to the home team. Dallas roll over the Sounders.
Are we going to throw air quotes around game for that one? Because it wasn't much at one.
It wasn't much. Clint Dempsey got a red card in this one. 37th minute. You probably saw it. Ja'Cory Hayes kind of sidles up behind him on the edge of the box. Grabs him a little bit. Ball's, you know, 6 yards away probably in the middle of being cleared. Clint, I'm just going to do this in kind of non-accusatory
language here. Cup check.
He raises his arm, cocks it, you could argue, certainly, and I would, and throws it back into the midsection of Ja'Cory Hayes, who goes down in a heap. And I believe on instant replay, Bobby described the area in which he may or may not have gotten hit. We don't have a great angle as his jingles. And goes to video review. And Chris Pinso comes back from video review very quickly and gives him a red card, and Clint claps in his face, which is basically the exact same scene from the Colorado Rapids regular season finale last year, in which Clint was thrown off for an elbow off the ball as well. Anybody here going to be like Bobby, who's not here to defend himself, but this is his take, said it was not a red card, that Clint was just trying to get Ja'Cory Hayes' arms off him to keep him from being held, and that this is a play that happens all the time on set pieces, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that part might be true.
With that sort of power and force up and down like that, I definitely agree that there's grabbing and people are knocking hands away and pushing and jostling. I'm not sure that there's that sort of force going on a regular basis.
Well, we're going to talk about it when we talk about Kendall Waston, but it does happen on a lot of set pieces.
Okay.
It is ignored on a lot
we'll
of set pieces.
We'll talk about that. I think these are different.
But I don't agree with Bobby. So
it's a red card. Red card?
I don't know what to think. I haven't watched instant replay yet.
Oh, that's where you.
I have no opinions.
Your opinion is based off their opinion.
Right.
He has like 50 burner accounts on YouTube in which he just berates us in the comments section.
No, I just wait for Devin to tell us what to think in the group chat.
Yeah, we have a running group chat in which we are judged, which is interesting. You feel free to do that by texting us as well here, 401-206-0MLS. But Dallas get the 3-0 win, and so that they don't accuse us of ignoring them, let's talk about Roland Lamah, who comes in and gets two goals, and Mauro Diaz looks a lot like Mauro Diaz of old. This was a good performance from FC Dallas, if sort of an incomplete on the report card because of, you know, the state of the game.
I think you have to be happy that Mauro Diaz looks like 2016-era Mauro Diaz now. He's been their best player, well, all four or five games they've played so far. Four games they've played so far in 2018. Rudy got a goal, which is maybe a good thing, maybe a bad thing, because like it means more minutes for Rudy, even when he's shooting from 40 yards on a 3-on-2 break. That was the worst shot, I think, that we will see in MLS this year. Like Carlos Rivas blushed after seeing that shot. Obviously, there's some good stuff. A 3-0 win probably felt really good for FC Dallas. They still look really gappy to me in the back. Like, it's not tight, that back line. The defensive midfielders are a little too spread out from Matt Hedges and Rito Ziegler. And it just – Seattle's not going to do it because Seattle can't play soccer right now. But, like, other teams, I think I look at Dallas and I think other teams will be able to play through, and I still worry about that.
Sounders, of course, ravaged by injury. We saw that against Chivas midweek. Same thing here. Now they have to deal with a suspension, perhaps even longer, to Clint Dempsey. We'll see what the disciplinary committee says about that.
Mailbag filled with people who are like, classic Sounders season, like, start awful, Dempsey gets this bizarre red card.
Yeah, Matt on Twitter said this. This is who the Sounders are and have been for the last 3 years. Exact same season, every single year. One, slow, ugly, injury-riddled start. Two, Dempsey gets a red card for punching someone in the nuts. Three, they turn it around in August and go on a run. So, hey, August is a ways
all
away.
All you have to do is sign another Nico Lodero. I mean,
well, they did it last year.
Right.
Well, they didn't sign Lodero, but, like, they turned it around in August.
They did. Everybody was a year younger in August of last year.
Oh, is that how that works?
Great stuff.
Right? And honestly, there were 11 teams instead of 12. And, like, the Western Conference was weirdly down last year after about a decade of being pretty dominant. I am already selling a lot of my Sounders stock. Not all of it.
What's the biggest position of need for the Sounders?
They have a lot of stuff to address. I mean, it would help if they had a big time center forward for sure. But at this point, the whole thing feels stale and like weirdly like lacking in spirit and cohesion, which is strange for a team that's been together this long.
But from a position breakdown, when healthy, this team has a pretty deep squad in MLS.
I would say. Kind of, yeah. I'm not sure they have real depth on the back line at any spot.
Okay.
Which is a problem. I'm not sure that they have high-level attacking depth. They have guys who look good on paper, but Wolf Eichram hasn't done anything. Victor Rodriguez hasn't done anything. You know, so on, like, Handwala Buana looks fun, but you don't know. And do we believe that Clint Dempsey is what he was 3 or 4 years ago? I don't think so. You know, so like, and this goes back to the overall structure. Like, their whole roster, they have like two guys, well, now three because it's Buana. They have three guys who were sort of on the come up in Roldan, Jordan Morris and Nabwana. Morris
Nuhu
is
Tolo, I think you'd say that about him, but he maybe not
true.
A difference maker.
True,
necessarily.
Yeah, he made a difference for Dallas. I think that Sounders fans have a reason to be concerned. I still think they get into the playoffs because I do think that Chad Marshall and Roman Torres will figure it out, and then that'll be okay. You know, they'll win a lot of 1-0 games, but I'm not in love with this team.
Roman Torres is doing like the Shaq thing where, you know, Shaq's like, yeah. Hey, Toby, I come to camp out of shape because I know everybody else will handle it for me, and then like middle of the season I just roll people.
Yep.
Roman Torres looks a little bit like he's in that mode right now.
And he was last year.
Yeah. A lot of people out there saying to us, hey, should Clint Dempsey have retired last year? I think that's kind of a knee-jerk reaction after this red card, but that would be more cap space, would be a different team, maybe not so reliant on him. Let us know what you think in the mailbag sometime. We'll read that with Bobby Warshaw. Let's stick with video review because it did change the game in Atlanta-Vancouver. Kendall Wasson got a red card in the 13th minute, and then a PK was awarded to Atlanta United. Leandro Gonzalez-Pirez kind of gets in behind him on a free kick, gets in his armpit a little bit, and then goes down clutching his face. And Ismael Elfat did not make a call on this play. He let play run. Franco Escobar missed a very, very good chance in front
was
of net.
Was he not offside on that chance?
I don't think
okay,
so.
Okay, because it looked like
yeah,
5 yards
I don't think so.
Up.
And then the ball gets cleared, and then, of course, gets in his ear, and he goes back. He reviews it. It takes a long, long time. Like, from the moment he went to the end, 4 minutes or something. And we learned through some discussions today that there were some technical issues with the screen down at field level and the footage that he was seeing because the VAR did see something they thought was definitive, obviously, and that's what initiated the review. In the end, Ismael Elfat comes back and says, this is a red card. I just don't see it. I see a PK here. I think I'm okay with that because I think he does impede the player and get back into him. It's almost like an arm bar with that right arm. And actually, if you want to see some great footage of this, head on over to Reddit where a couple of guys had PT Lupica and Orange FC had some like definitive angles here from the stands on a cell phone camera, which blows my mind. But of course, the VAR and referee did not have an opportunity to see this. I don't think it's a red card.
It's not physical contact to someone's head?
There was physical contact to somebody's head, but I'm not sure.
Is it in a soccer way?
It's not deliberate. I think so. The ball's coming right into them. That is where the ball is going to be won, in that exact area.
So what are you doing with your arm?
He's trying to hold off the player from behind. He doesn't look back. He doesn't target the head. There's nothing deliberate about it. I don't think it's excessive force or violent conduct, and so therefore I don't think it's a red card.
He has his arm down at like a 45-degree angle, and as soon as he feels Gonzalez Perez sort of come into the back of him, he lifts his arm up and clocks him in the chin. It's a straight red. Yeah. Well, wait, no, wait. It's not. I have to wait until I see an instant
correct.
Replay.
I was going to say, what are you talking about? You're getting
red.
My opinion right
it's
now.
It's a straight red.
I don't think it's a red card. Okay, fine. So you guys think it's red. I don't. Either way, Atlanta United roll Vancouver. And here's Joseph Martinez doing what Joseph Martinez does, which is getting a hat trick. 4 in his MLS career. He's one away from tying the all-time MLS record. And he's played just 23 games. Stern John and Diego Serna currently hold that record. This is what happens with Atlanta at
and
home.
And Landon?
No.
Landon has 4?
I know. No.
How many does Landon have?
I don't know.
The stat I said was Landon, Stern John, And Diego Serna all have 5.
Right.
I don't know if that's right because he can get it from Rick Laws or from Ben Bear.
I believe that is correct.
I believe
that.
Well, I just believe everything I see on Twitter.
Correct. No doubt about it. This is what Atlanta does, though.
People wouldn't lie on the internet.
Never. Up a man. And they did it. 4-1. Joseph Martinez, Andrew Carlton, first MLS assist. Kai Kamara stayed home with a groin injury. Are there bigger takeaways from this game, or is this one where you say that red card changed everything?
I could not tell you because I turned it off in the 19th minute.
You just said this is not for
me. There's 80 games to consume. I've watched Atlanta play man up at home before.
Yep.
I'm not going to learn anything from that.
Yep.
I don't really know that I would think Vancouver was going to really give them the best test anyway, but it doesn't matter. So that's how I could literally not tell you.
It would have been a little bit interesting because Vancouver liked to bunker in so well, and they do a lot of stuff that DC United did that last year really gave Atlanta some trouble. But David's right. As soon as the red card was shown, the game was over. And the only interesting point from then on was, you know, how well is Alphonso Davies going to play? And the answer was pretty well. And then would Andrew Carlton get some minutes? And he did, and he got an assist as well. So, you know, It was a victory for the player kids movement.
And it was a good time for Andrew Carlton to come on because his little mistake, his giveaway that resulted in Eric Hurtado's goal, isn't glaring. He can walk away from that one. He can celebrate the assist. Player kids, of course, Atlanta 4-1 winners against Vancouver. After that loss in week one to Houston, they now have two wins in a row. So right in the ship a little bit for the Five Stripes. New York City FC, though, are the only perfect team in Major League Soccer right now outside of LAFC. But 3-0, they do have the most wins, 9 points from three games. Atop the Eastern Conference, knockoff Orlando 2-0 at Yankee Stadium. The big data point here for folks looking at NYCFC, for Patrick Vieira as he judges this season, no David Villa. Did not dress for this game. Watched it in like a pretty cool-looking jacket up in the stands. And Sasha Kljestan played for the first time for Orlando. Had a bad giveaway, Sasha did. That led to the second goal. Another bad, bad play. Yoshi Yotun with the back pass to Joe Bendik that he completely flubbed. Leads to the first goal. This is what happens at Yankee Stadium. When you try to play in silly situations, out of the back, or you have a goalkeeper who's not good enough with his feet, you get yourself into tough scenarios, and then New York City FC generally walk away with three.
Yeah, New York City FC are really smart about being a pressing team now, understanding where they can force turnovers and how to capitalize on them, and they just kill teams in transition, which is what they did to Orlando City in this one. It does seem it was not very pragmatic to try to play out of everything. On Orlando City's part, especially when they know they've been having issues with their defense. But I can't say I was surprised by the result at all.
I don't think anybody is. 1 point from nine so far for Orlando. Sasha Kljestan, I think, said it best after this game. Quote, all the guys on our team know that we built this team to be a win-now type of team this season, and we can't wait too long to get things kickstarted before we put ourselves in too deep of a hole. The pressure is on, and we know it. What do you make of that quote?
It's interesting for him, right, because this is his first opportunity to get on the field. And I think for a lot of the guys who were brought in to be a part of this win-now mode, they haven't really gotten a chance to show themselves, but it doesn't matter because they're behind the eight ball. So it's basically worst of all situations, right? You don't get settled. You don't get comfortable playing as a unit, and yet you're behind the eight ball and you've done nothing wrong, basically. If I was a fan of their team, and this is coming from someone whose team has never won anything, yeah, I would be patient. Because you've built something, you know there's quality there. I don't know that people are going to be so patient with Jason Christ.
Josue Coleman came in this game, so that's a good start, as you said, Dave, for those players that they need to get back to start building cohesion. Lamina Sané played in this game. You're still waiting around for the Dom Dwyers, the Uri Rossells, and, of course, so much pressure on Justin Miram right now, but it's not a good start for Orlando. Would love to hear from those of you in the wall, Lions fans, what you think. At Extra Time Radio, MLSsoccer.com/mailbag, 401-206-0MLS. A big win for Montreal. Stato, the Canadian Classique, which is what we are now calling it. I don't think that's like an MLS thing. Mm-hmm. I think we've just decided as a group,
we're starting the movement. Yeah,
right. The Canadian Classique is the right name for this rivalry. 401 Derby, Impact fans, you hate it. You tell us about that all the time. There's no 401 in Montreal coming into Montreal.
There's also no St. Lawrence River because that was the other one that was proposed on Twitter. There's no St. Lawrence in Ontario.
Correct.
So both of those are out. Canadian Classique it is.
Part English.
Part French. It's perfect. 1-0 win.
Part English, part French, all Canadian.
Yes. 1-0 win for Montreal. Toronto FC are now 0-2 on the year. Every single team that was involved in the CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinals lost this weekend. It was a hangover central for everybody. They are among them. They're 0-10-2 in MLS post the CCL midweek, are Toronto FC, which is kind of one of those weird stats because they were garbage for a long time.
Yeah, for sure.
So a lot of those losses are like when they were just bad.
They were going to lose those games
right
anyway.
And now it's a little bit different, but that still is a crazy data point. Montreal, though, they played without really a center forward. Mateo Moncosu got a big fat DNP on my MLS fantasy team, and that was no good for me, but it was good for Remy Gard. Yeah, it was good for Remy Gard. They got his first win. They did it in front of a big crowd at home. Rod Fanny made his debut and looked really good, the 36-year-old that they plucked from Marseille. This was a good thing all around, I think, for the Impact.
It obviously, I mean, they got 3 points at home and pitched a shutout against their biggest rivals, and I think still obviously the best team in the league. It was, like you said, it was interesting what Remy Gard did. It was a 5-3-2, he said. It played a little bit like a 3-4-3 because both Jason Vargas and Ignacio Piatti were so free up front. They were able to go, like, and neither's a true forward, so they actually ended up playing more like midfielders or wingers. So it was a really weird look, and I think it threw Toronto off for 60 minutes, and that was enough. They got the 1-0 lead, and then they were able to batten down the hatches and kind of survive a final half-hour onslaught from the Reds. But this Montreal team's a little bit feisty. You know, they did lose those first two games, but in both they showed they had ideas going forward, and now in Fanny they have a center back who, you know, looks the part anyway, and they're bringing in more reinforcements as well. This team could get pretty good pretty quick.
You mentioned those reinforcements. They did sign a player today. Uruguay midfielder Alejandro Silva comes over from Lanús in Argentina. Pretty good prospect here. It looks like 23 years old. And then the other one is Rudy Camacho. He is he's agreed terms, according to Sportsnet, but there have not been a transfer agreement right now between them and the Belgian team that he's with currently. So that's another defender to bring in, which they desperately need. If they start to get together with these reinforcements, I mean, Cam from Montreal hit us up and says he thinks that this game is proof of their potential, and he thinks these changes, these additions, mean that they could be legit cup contenders.
Well, first of all, Silva's 28, not 23, so he's like in his prime. He's a guy that's ready to go now. So I do think I picked them preseason to make the playoffs. So I'm like praying right now that they do put a couple of these moves together, and Fanny did look good in this game. My question, Doyle, where does Silva go? And if he – do they just play like three wingers up front? If they play him outside, do you start Raheem Edwards on the back line?
I mean, Raheem Edwards didn't even get off the bench. So Raheem Edwards is going to have to fight for a position somewhere, and like this is where his versatility comes in. But it's hard to get a feel for exactly what Remy God sort of sees from this team. You know, the new guy is apparently kind of a pure midfielder, more than a pure wide midfielder, more than just a winger. So maybe that means we'll see a 3-4-3 or a 3-5-2 or a 5-3-2 more and more often. Putting Piatti as a second forward kind of saves his legs a little bit as he gets up there. So that kind of makes some sense. But more than anything else, like, it just feels like there's more versatility and certainly more talent in this group.
This is a team that needs depth because they've had injury problems. And when they do, they're one of those squads where they roll out anyone who can play.
Yeah, and Kim said it in this letter to us. He said, yeah, they lack depth. I get that, but he thinks that these additions could help them out.
The other guy's a 27-year-old center back, came from France, has started everywhere he's been, started all year.
Yeah, 27 starts right now in the Belgian league. So
he's a legitimate player. They obviously need numbers at center back, so they can only get better. So
isn't that a Johan Cruyff-style resume there?
Now – I would trust it more for a center back than for a number 10 DP.
I would as well. We'll see what happens, though. Got to agree to terms, apparently, here. Minnesota United, the Loons, 2-1 winners at home against Chicago. The Wonder Wall after the game. If you haven't seen that tradition or heard it or whatever, go watch the video that Fox Sports put out after this one. I mean, it's goosebump worthy. It's incredible. And it was a 23,000-plus crowd there, the third biggest on the weekend. So congratulations to Minnesota fans. That's two wins back-to-back. We, have turned their wingers, and so has everybody else, into this running joke. And then they go play basically three wingers behind Christian Ramirez, and they get a win. I mean, Ibarra was pretty good as the number 10. Good enough that Adrian Heath says, he's going to get run back out there again. Sam Nicholson gets the game-winning goal. He's looking pretty good after a good week against Orlando. And then you have Ethan Finley, who you basically know what you're going to get out of at this point.
That is basically the rundown for it. And I why should we be surprised that Abar is a pretty decent attacker in that role, given that Molino was a winger who came from the lower divisions and then became a pretty decent, you know, ad hoc sort of number 10 in Montreal's or Minnesota's weird system. Like, that's basically Ibarra's resume. He was a really good lower division winger, and he plays as a number 10 now for at least two games, and he looks pretty decent doing it. So it's like history repeating itself for the Loons.
Yeah, Molino isn't – his game's not as based on speed as Ibarra's is, plus – Molino plays it for a national team.
He's
so
better in combination.
But
no doubt about
that. But what I saw in this game was whatever it was that Ibarra did, and I don't know individually how great he was, left space for Nicholson and Finley to do what they do best. And if that's the most you're going to get from it, then that's fine, because those players, like you said, you know what you're going to get from them. They have quality. I've made fun of Sam Nicholson probably on this show as much as anyone, but he was very good this week. It helped that Chicago started Kevin Ellis.
I don't think I've made fun of Sam Nicholson at all. Why are you making
probably
fun of
not.
Sam Nicholson?
Because I mean, it's not that we're making fun
here's
of
here's the
him.
Thing. His family and my family, we go back generations of rivalry.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Gotcha. Classic Nicholson.
But that's a good point on Chicago Fire. Here comes Kevin Ellis.
Yeah.
Elliot Collier comes in. They score an ugly goal in which
Collier actually had a couple of good runs.
He did, but this goal comes off of Minnesota United kicking the ball off themselves four times.
It looked like Albert Elise's goal.
It was hideous.
Guys,
defending.
What's going on with the Fire? Why have they not added any reinforcements?
I was thinking about that.
Sanchez was not good on the first goal.
Nope.
I mean, he deflected it back into his own box and then went on the largest leap in mankind's history to try and block the goal. Center back's not good enough. Kevin Ellis is not a starting center back in MLS. And then Kitai is smooth. He's fun to watch, but I don't know that he's a dominant player.
Yeah, he was really good against KC, I thought, but that was also because KC were in shambles.
Right.
And then he was pretty much invisible in this game in large part,
yeah.
And then he was out.
And
then it's like, what do you have from there?
Right.
You're saying, okay, Solanac, go get it done. Okay, fill in the blank. What's Nemanja Nikolic going to do in this situation?
You're playing a third-round draft pick.
And that's where I'm with Doyle. It's like, what's been – this is like the players got to do their jobs, but if you're Dax McCarty or Bastian Schweinsteiger or any of these guys that are saying my career is win now and this team we thought was in the place to win now, why have we made the moves?
Yeah,
what happened?
It's a big question.
Like if the Revs are saying, hey, we're not going to trade Lee Wynn, which there are rumors that they're open to that now.
Yeah,
but weren't there other options?
I
like
mean,
at some
Lee
point,
Wynn must have been a last case scenario because you didn't know this was going to happen.
It's a good point.
If you're Chicago, you had a plan before Lee Wynn. This wasn't the start of what you were going to do. You had the idea from the Dax trade of if we stockpile some resources, something might happen and we can grab that player. So, like, you have those resources. But that's not your game plan for a team that improved last year and needed to improve.
That doesn't apply to center back.
Yeah.
I mean, and I look at this team and, like, I love Tony Chani. I think he's a great player. Bobby Warshaw says this is the year he has his bounce back season.
Sure.
But, like, going and trading for Tony Chani is – that's like putting a finger in the dam. You know what I mean? Like, that's a stopgap. That's not a solution. Long term, probably. So a lot of questions with the Fire right now. We'll see what happens with them. DC United gave it away in the first half. Houston Dynamo gave it away in the second half at Maryland Soccerplex. DeMarcus Beasley had a lot to say about this. He wasn't too happy with the conditions out there, but it was kind of cool. Small field, good surface. That's always been the reputation at Maryland Soccer. And then it started snowing, so I was hoping for an orange ball to add to the absurdity.
I put this game on, and my girlfriend goes, I think I played my youth championships on that field.
I mean,
she's like, where is that?
I was
like,
no. And DeMarcus came out, and he tweeted, and you go check his tweet out. He said it was unacceptable, that it was a circus. I think there were some really good points out there that were basically saying, hey, this would have landed better. I don't disagree with him completely. This is obviously not ideal. DC United is waiting for Audi Field to open. They were looking for solutions. They didn't want to go back to RFK. We all get it. This is not ideal. But he would have had a few more fans out there with his take, I think, if he points out that, hey, the Washington Spirit do this. Like, we should all have better accommodations. We should hope for better for everybody. But I felt it was a little bit, I don't know, fell in deaf ears for me. But Houston Dynamo should have got an away win. They should have got an away win. This is the story with the Houston Dynamo. DC United basically gift-wrapped two goals, handed it to them in the first half, gave them three or four other chances that should have been goals. Elise, Minotas,
yep.
Biffed them, and then they choke it out in the second half. Like, what's going on?
I'm not overly concerned about it from Houston's point of view because it's early season and they're already mostly playing well. The issue that they had in the second half, they're organized. They understand how they want. The issue that they had is they just don't have any speed on that back line, and they got killed because of it. And I think that that's something that they kind of have to be aware of it. You know, they can look at what's going on and say, like, oh, you know what, maybe we can get a central defender who's less than 32 years old and can actually run. You know, and
is
like,
is Fuyen Maher going to play? Like, is at what point
that's
does
the
question.
I mean, that's the question.
Because he right? has to be that guy, right? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I would assume he is. Otherwise, you were just like
the fact that he hasn't been able to win a position is mildly concerning. But I mean, to me, this is a point on the road, and
yeah,
obviously,
I agree. And one where you gave up a 97th minute equalizer.
Yeah. So I'm not.
You were 30 seconds away from walking out
yeah,
with three
for
points.
Sure.
in a weird scenario, right?
You would have had it. Like I keep going. Like the miss by Albert Elise keeps replaying in my head because
sure.
I'm such
but
a huge fan of Elise.
But. I'm a huge fan of Elise. I've been a huge fan of Elise. But that was the whole point. Is like everyone's like, well, he's going to take a step and blah blah blah. And it's like, no, he had a great year last year and lacked consistency in the final third. That's not going to magically go away this year. And that's your team's built around that guy.
Pablo Maurer hit us up on Twitter at MLSist if you're not following him. He says, wonder what you guys have thought of Assad so far. He's been somewhat unimpressed. Can he come close to matching the numbers with DC they had in Atlanta without the dynamic playmakers around him?
By the way, Albert Elise has 2 goals and 3 assists
in 3 games.
Yeah, he's
fantastic. I'm not
lacking end product.
It's not lacking.
But it's in those moments, okay? Like, you can shoot 70% from the three-point line, but in the last 2 minutes of a game, are you going to hit them?
J.J. Redick.
I think that chance was more like straight-up layup. But anyway, we ignored Pablo's question.
Okay.
Yamil Assad right now?
We talked about this last week, though, of like saying the type of player he was isn't the type of player he has to be for them. So
I still see the defensive work from him. And his pressure leads. And he has the assist on Darren Maddox's goal,
He's been their best player. He's been obviously he had a brain fart with the first Houston goal, with that back pass, which I don't understand what he was doing there. But other
back
than,
header into nowhere, like whoop.
But other
by the way,
than
when
that,
I watched that live, I was like, I wasn't really paying attention. I was like, that's a phenomenal through ball. Yeah. I then watched it again. I was like, that was a back pass because it was weighted so
cleanly.
There
were a couple decisions from.
I think Assad has looked pretty good, actually. And considering that the way DC plays is so much different than the way he played last year in Atlanta, where everything was combinations and like keeping things actually pretty tight. You're never without a teammate more than 10 yards away when you're playing for Tata Martino. With DC, everybody's always out on an island. So I wondered if Assad could do that. I think he's actually been effective. Now, is he a Piatti-level winger in this league?
Is he 7-13 effective from 2017?
Would anybody be 7-13
right,
on DC?
Right, and nobody's Piatti. Like,
right.
And he's definitely not Piatti in the sense that he doesn't want to run at you in that way.
But he's been better than Stieber. He's been better.
Oh, that's for sure.
He's been better than Acosta. He's been better than Areola. Even though I think Acosta and Areola both had very nice second halves. So I mean, do you build your team around Yamil Assad? No, I don't think he could be your best player if you want to win a championship. But he could help a really good team be even better.
Shout out to Chris Durkin in this game. Came in late because Junior Moreno had to leave with an injury and had some pinpoint long balls, diagonals. Looks pretty good, the young man. So we'll see what happens with him over the course of the next few weeks. Sporting KC 3, San Jose 2. Wando watch continues. He got a late one in this one. Such a good finish. Left-footed, first time, of course. He's now at 135. Tim back of Landon Donovan at 145. Sporting KC attack looks on, though.
Who are they? Who is Sporting Kansas City? Like, this is the opposite of what they were last year. A 4-3 win and a 3-2 win. They dominated the first half. The only half chance San Jose had was their goal. Like, they completely dominated, and they should have been up 3-0, and it's 1-1 at halftime. You got to wonder with that team what's going on.
Felipe looks good. Johnny Russell looks good. We'll talk to Sam
Johnny Russell looks very good.
We'll talk to Sam Stishkel about Johnny Russell because he really, really likes him.
Shallowy
looks good. I thought he could have been sent off in this game. He did get the yellow card. He kicked out in, like, the 13th minute.
Yeah.
Little naughty, Daniel, but you stayed on, and it worked out for you in Sporting Kansas City. Peter Vermees would have melted down, I bet, if they would have sent him off in this game. Can we just ask what Anibal Godoy and Shea Salinas are doing on Graham Zusi's goal? Best man butt in the league, best left-footed strike of the year, beautiful goal from the right back.
Absolutely.
But that is shocking defense.
Yeah, it looked like Salinas was going to be able – or was thought he was going to be able to sort of pass Zusi off and get help from the central midfield. And so before seeing whether or not he actually had help – He stopped
just,
being tight, and he
just
faded back into the passing lane.
Yeah.
And, like, Shallow, or maybe it was Russell, wasn't even making the run, so you didn't even have to make, like, so that's a type of mental error that a guy who's still learning the position, you kind of expect.
And I actually think Shea Salinas has been pretty good out there this year. And Anibal Godoy.
But he's been playing the position for 2 years at this point.
Year and a half.
He played it all of last season, right?
Yeah.
And he played it a little bit the year before.
Year and a half.
He should know.
Well, Anibal Godoy's been playing
the
soccer
slip
for
ball
30,
to the corner. Yeah, that's
31
true.
Years or something like that. I don't know how old he is.
Yeah.
Facts don't matter in this case. But he throws himself on the ground like hockey style.
Yeah.
Doesn't try to close the ball down.
It's called a pad stack. That's continue.
It was just incredible. Some other results from the weekend here. RSL 1, New York Red Bulls 0. Once again, CCL hangovers in effect here.
Also, not a promising result from RSL. This was like a B team, NYR B team. You score a fourth minute PK. You're on the back foot the entire second half. You're playing your A team. This has not been good. I just want to throw
it's
that
enough.
Out there. And I'm here.
Right, right.
I'm here. I stand up to
for
believe.
RSL?
Yeah.
Right.
But this has not been pretty.
And it was on a gift. Carlos Rivas, for no apparent reason, like pulls down David
Rugby
Horst.
Tackles
like,
David
what are you
Horst.
Doing? Why would you do that? And why would you have Carlos Rivas mark David Horst?
Yeah, that's a good one. But we all talked about them as a Western Conference favorite, whatever you ended up picking them as preseason. And 4 weeks in, they have not looked like that
team
a single time. Yeah.
It's been tough. Philadelphia 0, Crew SC 0. Jesse Zardes had a couple chances in this one from some Pipa Higuain magic. Just beautiful through balls. Wasn't able to convert. That'll happen. But Brisket Bear wants us to talk about the youngest center back pairing in MLS, going two games without giving up a goal. This was not a great result because it was at home, Doyle, but it was encouraging.
It was more convincing in a way than what they did against the Revs. Pitching a shutout against a very good Columbus attack is that's meaningful. And they, Jack Elliott looks like he's avoiding the sophomore slump. Keegan Rosenberry is back to what he was a couple years ago when he was a rookie. And Austin Trusty hasn't put a foot wrong. So there's this ethos that Philly's preached for a long time seems to finally be rounding into shape, and you could see it on the field.
Playoff team? Like right now, if you had to?
No.
No?
I think the East is just too tough.
Yeah. I'm still in a no too, because you got to create more at home. I know Columbus have been good so far, but they have given up goals. Mm-hmm. You got to create more at home.
Yeah, Borik Dokal did not have a very compelling debut as the 10 for Philly.
Early days, let us know what you think. MLS Week 3 in the books. 401-206-0-MLS, the Hot Take Hotline. Call us, text us, MLSsoccer.com/extra time for the MLS mailbag. And extra time at MLSsoccer.com is the email. We're going to break on the other side. Gam, Tam, and Sam. Sam Stachkol.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now at Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. You know what time it is. Gam, Tam, and Sam. Sam Stachkol, at Sam Stachkol on Twitter, MLSsoccer.com's national writer, one of two, with Paul Tenorio, who joins us on Thursdays. Sam, what's up, man?
Not too much, guys. How's it going this week?
It's going good. What's going on with Seattle? Terrible week. Terrible.
Yeah, I mean, any discussion about Seattle, I think you need to preface everything by acknowledging that they have a absurd amount of injuries right now. Obviously, Nico Lodero going out. Everyone knows about Jordan Morris, on and on. Ozzie Alonso. Leerdam just came back, but he had been out for a while. Will Bruin's out, et cetera. So they're in a brutal stretch with the number of guys that they have out. We saw that big time against Chivas in the second leg and at Dallas this past weekend. That said, even with the amount of injuries that they've had, I think it's probably fair to say that it still hasn't been anywhere near good enough from the Sounders. Obviously, a brutal week. 2-3-0 road losses in Mexico and in Texas. Roman Torres is having a really rough go of it right now. He doesn't really look like he's fully in shape at the moment. He's had a few bad mistakes that have cost them. Clint Dempsey obviously had a pretty bad red card against Dallas, pretty needless. But the bigger part for me, I have faith in those guys that they're going to figure it out. They're going to play well. They're vets. We know what they're about. But the bigger issue for me, and this extends back beyond the injuries, is there doesn't really seem to be a lot of tactical definition with the Sounders. And part of this is injuries, right? Anytime you're missing that many key players, you're going to have guys not exactly knowing their roles. But even when they're healthy, I don't love kind of how they sort of freelance a lot in the attack. And you kind of have guys bumping into each other a little bit, guys popping up in the same spots. And when it's working, it's fine. When things are coming off well, you know, they can put up 3, 4, 5 goals if everything's clicking, right? But you'll have these little patches where the Sounders aren't really clicking, where the guys are popping up in the same spots, where that chemistry isn't there, and that lack of an identity, that lack of tactical definition, that lack of a clear idea of what they're going to do from each spot, I think can really hurt them. And I think we're seeing that certainly now. And I think that's kind of a long-term concern, even when they get healthy again, is can they figure that out to a point where they can kind of have things humming and not hit these little bumps like we've seen them hit.
Sam,
not just this year, but in past years.
Sam, real quick, how's your arm?
My arm's good, you know. I haven't worked out or anything today, so real fresh.
All right.
Sam, question from James Wisniewski, who's coming at you. Who should the Sounders be looking at as a DP, and when does it happen? Not if, when.
Well, I'm interested to find out if the timeline's been accelerated at all, just given what's gone on this past 7 days. I still think it happens over the summer. In terms of a name, I don't really have one. I mean, it has to be an attacking player. It has to be probably a number nine. I think that's what this team needs. I think if you have a number nine who can kind of lead the line, maybe if he has a little bit of speed, can stretch things out a little bit, that makes that tactical definition a lot easier for everyone else. Creates a lot more room for people to operate. You don't have to play Dempsey there. You can let him kind of roam underneath. I mean, in terms of him, the name, who knows? It's a big market out there. But I think it should be a number nine. And I think it will likely be this summer, although given how things are going, I wouldn't be shocked if they got it done in this window.
See what happened with the Sounders. You mentioned kind of definition to a team, tactical identity. For you right now, through 3 weeks, I know it's early, which coach has done the best job in MLS?
I mean, it's hard to pick anybody but Bob Bradley, I think, at this point. You know, taking an expansion team and having your first two games like that is pretty remarkable. You know, they obviously are missing some pieces themselves. They don't even have their third DP in yet. We'll see if they're able to get that done at some point soon here. But I think it's pretty hard to argue that Bob Bradley hasn't done the best job so far. Jesse Marsh has obviously done a really good job kind of with the depth of the Red Bulls, both in CCL and in MLS play. And I think Greg Berhalter's done a really nice job again too, you know, kind of sticking with that system that we've seen him have great success with in Columbus these last couple of years. And despite losing Ola Kamara and Justin Miram, getting them off to a good start.
Who was the under-the-radar signing in January that you're liking so far?
I really like Felipe Gutierrez in Kansas City. I think he's been really good for them. I don't think he got a lot of hype when he came in. Johnny Russell, also in Kansas City. I've liked what he's brought.
Does it surprise you?
Other guys.
Sam, you just said two Sporting KC players. And like, yeah. On this show, we're always like, man, I don't know about Sporting KC, these foreign signings.
Sam only watches one game a week, though. So he's gotcha. Just watched two SKC. Mm.
That's so not true. I've turned over a new leaf this year. I'm watching so much MLS. It's bad for my health. Like,
this year.
Does it surprise you, though, with Kansas City? Like,
No, I don't think it surprises me. I mean, I think what surprises me with Kansas City is they got Quaze. Are we going with Quaze there?
I think Quaze is what we're going with right now.
Okay,
yeah.
Quaze.
Go ahead and mark that one off here on your bingo board.
Right, because they're kind of, you know, you play Gutierrez and you can't really play Quaze in the central, which is his position. So we saw how he looked out wide. It didn't really work. So now you have two big offseason signings and you can only really play one of them. So that's the surprising part. In terms of other guys, though, that maybe flew under the radar, I've liked what I've seen from Magnus Eriksson in San Jose so far. Milton Valenzuela in Columbus is one that I think is going to be good. And Saphir Teitur in Montreal. You know, Montreal's a team that flies under the radar a lot. Maybe because a lot of people don't speak French. And that's
Sam, learn French. There, respect Montreal.
Yeah. What's up?
Learn French. Respect Montreal.
Okay, I'll just keep going with Quaze. That's the starting point. We'll see if I can take it further. But yeah, so I think those are some of the guys that have flown under the radar. I mean, even a kind of a deeper level, I think Marco Urania has been really good. Not a out-of-the-league acquisition, but LAFC getting him. Perry Kitchen's going to be key. If LA are going to be good, I think. Aro has been really good in Toronto. And one that didn't go under the radar, but I don't think got talked about enough, was Jesus Medina for NYCFC. Dude looks awesome. He got overshadowed by Barco, but he looks like he's going to be a real player.
Looks great. Check back at MLSsoccer.com for all the coverage of the league from Sam Stachel. At Sam Stachel, before we let you go, though, Sam, Grant Wall had an interesting report last week about the U.S. GM position, and we saw that get created, and there's some requirements, but now it looks like people aren't even all that interested in it, which is kind of a bummer, but also speaks to maybe what the position entails. When you saw that report, and as you talk to people around the league and around U.S. soccer, what are you hearing?
I've heard similar things. I haven't heard quite to the extent that Grant did, where some of the stuff he reported, I think it was saying that it was a PR ploy. But, you know, I'm not doubting his reporting. I just haven't heard that at all. That said, I mean, I think when we heard, I was on a conference call with Dan Flynn a few weeks back and other media members, and they were kind of outlining what the job was. And it sounded, I think my main takeaway from it was that it was a lot narrower than I expected in terms of what the duties are. And so with that, I think if you're not giving clear power in, say, youth development and the development academy and the youth national teams, if you're not giving that to the GM hire, then naturally, I think you're going to limit your pool of candidates. Now, saying that, I think there's some merit to not giving too much power to one person. I think we've seen how that can work in U.S. soccer. And I think U.S. soccer is well within their rights to kind of protect against that and kind of divide the power a little bit. I think ideally, whoever the GM hire is, they get into the job, they put a good team around them, they hire some good people. And they're able to kind of grow into more things and kind of become a benevolent soccer czar. I think that would be the hope of anyone that is a fan of the U.S. national team. But, you know, I get why they're not giving all that power right away. Hopefully the hire can kind of grow into that, kind of get some of that power. But because it's not spelled out all the way, I think you're going to limit the pool of candidates just because, you know, for a lot of different reasons. But I think when it comes down to it, I think maybe being an MLS general manager might be a little bit more interesting than that job as it's currently defined.
Sam, I gotta tell you, man, benevolent soccer czar is just such a wonderful turn of phrase.
I think we should actually start naming all of our GMs around the league in the same, like Ivan the Terrible,
right?
You know, like I don't know what it
the
would
czars
be,
like, of Russian history type of thing. Yeah.
If you want to hit us up, 401-206-0MLS, we might have to do that in the mailbag next time. Sam Stachel, Gam Tam, and Sam every single Monday here on Extra Time Radio. Sam, thanks for joining us, man.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys.
Always a good time with Sam. I think he just started something. We need your czar-esque nicknames for folks around Major League Soccer. Get at us. Let's talk about the U.S. national team, the friendly against Paraguay coming up on March 27th. That's next Tuesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. This is going to be at Wake Med Soccer Park in Cary, North Carolina. This roster, as I said in the open, is young, very young. 23 years, 84 days is the average age of the 23 players in there right now. We have five first-ever call-ups: Shaq Moore, Tim Weah, Anthony Robinson, EPB, and then also Andrea Novakovic. What do you think?
I think it's Novakovic.
Novakovic. Hmm. Bingo board is lighting up right now. Yeah. What do we make of this one? We have, like, I don't know, 10, is it 10 leagues?
Yeah.
Represented? MLS, Liga MX, the championship, the Belgian first division, Eredivisie, and the second division the Netherlands as well. EPL, Denmark, Bundesliga, Ligue 1, La Liga. It is a varied roster that Dave Sarakin chose from. What do we make of it, Doyle?
I don't care.
You don't care?
Yeah,
I care.
I don't care. There's no World Cup coming up. This coach is, you know,
Dave Sarakin. Go home, Doyle. You're so cranky.
Dave Sarakin's going to coach two or three more games. I don't care.
I care.
Hopefully a few of the guys go out there and you know, play some decent soccer and look pretty into it. Nobody gets hurt.
Also, maybe lock themselves into playing for the U.S. That matters.
You can't.
Doyle can't get excited.
No, but, like, it's on the road to, oh, yeah, I get. Okay, Jonathan Gonzalez didn't get a phone call. We yelled about Jonathan Gonzalez not getting a phone call for 3 months.
We're excited that the bare minimum has been done with regards to guys like Novakovic, who's playing in the Dutch second division.
No, by the way. In the Dutch second division.
Obviously the Weah thing is great, but this doesn't cap tie him.
No, but it, like, shows you that you're valued. It puts you in a place.
He was a starter for the – anyway, I don't care. I don't care. I might not watch this, to be honest with you.
That's not true. But it'll be fun to watch because the Portugal game was fun to watch because it's fun to watch young players.
What are you? You're on this side. He's over here. Like,
yeah, Dolan needs to go home.
I don't know.
He's
like
cranky.
Looking at Google Maps.
I didn't. Well, the
stalker style.
Anyway, I didn't watch the Bosnia game, the US Bosnia game back in January. Didn't care about that one. Don't care about this one.
Okay. Yeah, January friendly is different.
What are you? Oh, okay. What are you looking for here? What are you excited about?
What am I excited about? Well, Doyle's guy, Marky Delgado, getting the call up.
I know. Where's
Tyler? Has not been good this year, by the way.
Oh, he was in CCL.
Okay,
he played
yeah,
well
he,
against Tigres.
He was. In the first leg, he was really good. Yeah, second leg, he wasn't great.
So you like the idea of the young midfield. You've got Roldan, McKinney. You've got Tyler Adams. You've got Will Trapp in there. Those are the guys who are probably the core of your like central midfield. And also, yeah, it's really early. And they're really young, and they may not develop. But you got some fullbacks for the first time in a really long time. Shaq Moore is doing good things in La Liga, which is impressive. And then you've got Robinson coming in, who's on loan from Everton, who I've actually seen play in a Dallas Cup game.
Nice.
Was super random.
You've seen him play with Bolton, right? Because you're a big championship fan.
Big on the Champo.
Oh, we'll get
three Champo players.
We'll
in
get
this.
When Ben's here. We'll
yeah, he's
him.
The Champo
he'll
guy.
He'll definitely hook us up. What I like is just – Is look, I we have like the raining on the parade take over here, and we appreciate that from Doyle. He keeps us honest, and then you've got some enthusiasm. I just like the kind of like the mystery box aspect of this, and a bunch of guys that we don't know much about, and I haven't seen much of. I mean, hell, even a Rubio Rubin is a mystery box at this point, both for club and for country.
By the way, that January camp may have saved his career. Because he was going nowhere, and he came in, played well, and then all of a sudden gets a contract with Tijuana, and now he's getting playing time for them.
Got an assist.
Yeah.
There you go.
Kakuta Mane in this camp. He got called in late from Pachuca. I like that. The young midfielders, of course. But then just like, you know what? Let's see Eric Palmer Brown. Let's see Cameron Carter-Vickers. Mm-hmm. Are we going to have an all-hyphenated back line? Is that how we're going to do this thing? Like, you know, I'm not looking for that much. Everything's a benefit. There's really no risk. It's going to be a low-profile friendly. I mean, if Doyle's not watching – Why should anybody watch,
Doyle
right?
Doyle will be watching.
Doyle will be watching just secretly.
Doyle's going to watch it three times.
Ben Bear's knocking on the door. I think that means it's mailbag time. Let us know what you think of the U.S. national team's roster. Hit us up. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio. With any comments, questions, or reactions.
You cower in your tower, praying that I'll disappear. I got another plan. When there requires me to stand on the stage or in the street, don't need no microphone or beat. And when you hear the song, if you ain't dead, sing along. Bang a strum on these your drums.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental in the green room. And we have an addition here, Ben the Research Bear, King of Takes. It's Monday. This is your opportunity, Ben, your opportunity to wow us with statistical knowledge and your hot takes, which you don't bring anymore.
That's how we're going to start this segment. just straight troll. That's how we're starting the segment. I'm going to troll you back because now you're saying it's the green room. I mean, it is
the green room.
The green room. But, like, I feel like you should be using the now added thing that I haven't seen yet. This is the first time
I've
seen
it. Yeah, we have a bunch of signed Topps cards on the wall, which is pretty dope.
Pretty
but it's always been the green room.
There are some outrageous cards on here. There's a signed rookie card for Kyle Fisher.
There's a Steven Gerrard card.
Yeah.
Those ones where these have the jersey inside?
Yeah, also.
Those were cool.
Great.
Yeah.
Taylor Kemp right here. I kind of want McClure to sign the Taylor Kemp card.
Speaking of starting the mailbag with a troll job, Nicolino Di Benedetto here wants an explanation of how Matt Doyle shaves his head and why he does it.
Why I decide to shave it on
no,
the
like
week,
how,
like
like,
a weekly
like
basis.
How do you do it? Because like some people
it's weekly
there.
Then.
Yeah. About weekly. Yeah. I just have a clipper like you go to the barbershop.
So you don't go full shave.
Wait.
No, I don't. I don't bick it.
You don't bick it.
Wait, you go to the barber?
No, I used
no,
to
like
go
you
to
would, yeah.
like you. You ever use like a?
Yeah,
you know, yeah.
You use that? It goes all the way down there.
Is it? Are you afraid of cutting yourself with the bick, or is it just a? Russian beat, it's a laziness thing. Okay.
We also have another troll job to start off on, which is, did Ben Bear guarantee a Virginia NCAA championship?
Wow. I would never do that. I know from experience that the Bennetts don't do well in the tournament.
Oh.
Well, that's a self-Wisconsin burn. Look it up.
Also, we heard you were delighted to be recognized at stands outside of Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, I'm very popular these days, so it's not
how often do you get recognized by fans?
You know, a couple times a game that I go to. So,
woo, man,
very
extra
popular
time
these days.
That's how you know ETR and Ben Bear
have made it. The brand is super strong.
Wow. One more random one to get us going before we actually talk soccer. Philip Doucette, our conversation about what we put on hot dogs actually turned into a hit among some people. Other people, I'm sure, are upset. But now Philip Doucette wants to know what goes on French fries: ketchup, vinegar, or mayo.
Ugh.
Not vinegar. I've never even heard
mayo's,
of that.
Mayo's extremely disgusting.
Yeah,
vinegar is a British thing. Salt
and
vinegar
British.
Chips?
You put malt.
Oh, I like salt and vinegar chips.
That comes from putting vinegar on French fries.
Yeah, but
or as the British call them, chips.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So you get some good like malt vinegar, and
mayo on French fries is just disgusting.
No,
it's not.
Mayo on most things
mayo's
is disgusting.
Fine.
Mayo is
the mayo thing is ridiculous.
If you're in Belgium, if you're in the Netherlands, and you get the mayo that they use, it's like kind of eggy and yolky, and
you
it's
know what?
Thicker. It's really
me.
Good.
That sounds disgusting.
We're in America, so in Canada, so
oh, go to Pomfret down in the village, man.
Yeah, dude, you
that place is awesome. You get to
expand your mind.
The gravy? No, I'm saying poutine would be legit, but that wasn't
gravy.
An option.
No, I didn't say poutine. I said pomfret.
I can open it up if you
it's
don't want ketchup.
It's a Belgian French fry place down in the East Village. It's awesome. They have like 30 different types of stuff you could put
I'm
on your fries.
I'm pretty sure this is the only time this whole show
you know
Doyle's actually been passionate about.
I know.
Anything. Right?
Yeah. You know what's,
I love French fries.
You know what's really good on French fries? Ketchup.
I agree. Yeah. The answer is all of those are good. Sriracha's good on French
fries.
Can
I throw a sleeper pick out there because I have to be cliche? Tahini is awesome.
Oh, yes. Shocking that you would say that.
I'm going to go with another non-shocker and say I really like honey mustard and indoor just like spicy mustard on French fries because I'm weird about it in that way. All right, let's talk soccer. What do you want to start us with, Dave?
All the teams that were in CCL either lost or tied over the weekend. Is that because of CCL hangover or something more?
That's from Perry in Portland. Thanks,
he also
Perry.
Trolled Dempsey, which I wasn't going to get into.
Yeah.
We had a lot of that this week.
Yeah. It's nice to finally see Dempsey get some contact with the ball.
It's a combination of both. Obviously,
that's pretty good,
yeah, actually.
You know, teams were coming off of very emotional games. Two of them were traveling from Mexico back to the U.S. You know, Seattle's been dealing with injuries. It's never just one thing. We always do that. It's never just one thing. It's always multiple things.
But a lot of different teams are struggling due
to one thing.
Toronto had to go from Monterey back to Toronto to Montreal in a great atmosphere in Montreal for a huge match after they just played a huge match. Seattle had to go to Dallas. I mean, the weather wasn't whatever, but they were missing five or six players. And the Red Bulls had to travel cross country and play at elevation.
The Red Bulls one is the least.
Yeah, I would say the Red Bulls, that was the one that was a little more surprising.
And to be fair, they outplayed. Yeah, they outplayed RSL. They just weren't sharp in the final third.
The expected goals had more if you take out the penalty.
I'm going to – God, what analytics. My God. Anyway, I'm with Ben on this one, believe it or not.
Speaking of Red Bulls, Matt from Section 129 of Red Bull Arena says, you guys have been drinking too much of the office Kool-Aid. Of course, we'd rather win a CCL title before MLS Cup. An MLS team wins MLS Cup every year. No MLS team has ever won CCL. And sorry to break this news to you, but MLS Cup is at best – the third most important trophy. Supporter Shield represents domination over the entire year, including 17 games where I am in the stands. Lack of real home field advantage where low seeds have a good chance makes MLS Cup that. Of course, I want Red Bulls to win MLS Cup, but when the final eight teams are put on equal footing, regardless of season performances, I can't take it.
I agree with every word of that.
Shocking that a Red Bulls fan would say the Supporter Shield is more important than MLS Cup.
would devalue MLS Cup.
Second.
Like, oh, yeah, we don't
I know,
care about that.
Like, we all like to look at Supporter Shield as, you know, kind of on equal footing as MLS Cup. But when every single player who comes in here says that MLS Cup is way more important to them, and every single coach says that too, I think we kind of just have to concede the point and say MLS Cup is more important. So that's just ridiculous.
I don't think that's ridiculous.
The CCL over the MLS Cup is just no.
But CCL, I buy too. When we had Brent Gamet hit us up in DMs, and he says, this longtime Red Bull fan, 101 Singer on Twitter, if you don't follow him, he's very entertaining. He says, I want CCL just for the lulz. If it's our first trophy, hilariously awesome. Western Sydney won the Asian CCL before winning the league. Why not Red Bulls? So I think it is for the lulz.
Hey,
first of all,
showed us
not
all the
first...
dead bodies on Matt Doyle.
Yeah, right.
Put those in.
Brent knows some deep, dark secrets. First of all, not the first trophy. It would be the first cup. All right, because the Red Bulls already have two trophies. The Shield,
they have a cup.
Emirates Cup.
No, stop it. It's not a real one. It's not a real one. The 2013-2015 Supporters Shield. To go back to Matt in 129, I agree that the Shield is a more important and honestly a better trophy than MLS Cup, but Ben's point is right. MLS Cup is the one that all the players and the coaches and the owners want.
They're all about that one.
Trevor J. Moore, who's a legend. ETR legend. I enjoyed your conversation about Chicago in the last mailbag, and while there's certainly a need for depth signings, I like the idea of our trio of center mids being able to be creators. I think the two biggest holes in our best 11 are goalkeeper and a second center back to play alongside Kappelhoff. What do you think about Nelson and Pano making a bid for Omar Gonzalez to play alongside him?
It's an interesting one because, you know, as the email goes on to point out, Omar's not playing for Pachuca anymore, and you know what he can do at MLS level, but like at the same time, Omar hasn't been good in 18 months. We're almost on 2 years now of Omar.
18 months?
Yeah.
He won CCO less than a year ago.
Sorry, 12 months. 12 months. Sorry, 12 months. So like, we're almost over a year now of him not looking like the guy he was. He wasn't good in the Gold Cup. No. He wasn't good in the Apertura. Obviously he wasn't good in the second half of World Cup qualifying, and now he's not even a starter for Pachuca. So it would be a risk at his age to spend what it would probably take to spend to bring him back.
Is there anyone else available around MLS or any name that pops
That's
up to
the
you?
Question.
I think the center back thing, they're probably waiting on Grant Lillard to come back and see what he is before splashing the cash on a big name, big money center back. I mean, definitely agree on the goalkeeper issue. I don't think Richard Sanchez has shown so far that he is capable of being an every week starter.
By the way, on Omar, they're 14th in the allocation order, so they would go and probably need to spend somewhere around half of what they got
from
Akam. I mean, that seems to be the price of number one, and if other teams know that they're desperate for it, that may increase the price. If they keep losing, that may jump that price.
To me, that rules it out. If they're going to spend $600,000 of allocation money.
I don't think it would be six, but it might be like $400,000, something like that. That's basically what it's been.
Money, money, money.
Yeah, money.
Speaking of money, big spenders in Minnesota. Austin from Iowa, thank you for the expanded commentary on Minnesota United. I remember the front office for the Loons explaining the lack of a DP last season by saying the focus was to find a core of players they could build around and fit a DP into that core. Head-scratching at the time. Now the Loons seem to have a core of wingerish attacking players in Calvo. Does the potential addition of a wingerish attacker in Quintero signal that the explanation last season was complete poop or that it just didn't work? Shocking, and they're starting fresh with a DP to work around. You guys are all stumped.
Yeah.
You were looking at Ben. Come on, Ben. Be a pro.
They've won 2 out of 3. That's great. They have all these players at these 3 or 4 or 5 spots. They have Calvo. I think to say they're building that core, they're really getting it together, I think is a little bit it's too soon.
It's premature.
It's premature. That was what I was looking for.
Yeah, it's premature.
Look, Ibsen is a fine player, and he gets the job done right now, but I think he's, 34 years old?
Mm-hmm.
Is he really part of their future? After this, it could be halfway through the season, and he may hit a cliff or something. And I don't see it yet from the other center-back position or the fullbacks, really. I mean, it's still early for me.
Is Quintero a good signing?
Depends. I mean, what Paul went through on Thursday, it depends on what they're paying him and how much the transfer fee is. If they're paying him more than $2 million, if they're spending more than $2 million in a transfer fee, I don't like it.
I also think that it goes back to what Austin is saying in here, is that, like, what is the plan? Like, what is the puzzle that all this is getting plugged into? Because I think there's a little bit of, like, push and pull at play when you have Adrian Heath, who seems to have his guys, and Manny Lagos, who seems to have his guys. It doesn't necessarily feel like there's this like coherent, we all agree, we're going in the same direction, signings are agreed upon, this is the best player for our team sort of thing in Minnesota all the time
yeah,
right
and
now.
And they go and sign two players from Cameroon, and do we know that they're with the team yet? Like, it just seems like there's a lot of things going on over there, and there's not one clear vision of what's happening. There's a lot of things you can like, but there's not one through line through everything that they're
doing. Yeah, scattered is what I would say.
Speaking of that, perfect, Andrew. Laser Boy, a.k.a. MCG. First off, podcast can be rambling, long-winded, and unstructured, so don't feel bad about that. But only okay in the third act because our last show went 95 minutes to 1,000 minutes, and people like to talk about that. Second off, the parts unknown tidbit is pretty funny. Here I was thinking you had some real quality pieces in the mailbag from actual listeners all those years it was first on Skinny. That's actually not true.
It's not true,
so I think
right.
we overstated it.
Correct.
Sometimes it happens.
If you don't list where you're from, which happens more than I would like it to happen because I always want to say, like, hey, this is where you're at, whatever. We'll throw the parts unknown. When we faked mailbag submissions, we almost always put a city on it.
Yeah, that's true.
So
Mitch from West Covina.
You got to cover your tracks.
So I didn't fake that many, I will say that, but sometimes when we wanted to talk about things. And
yeah,
like,
a topic that no one else seemed to care about, which shows how in touch we are with our fans. Finally, Gassman had a good attempt at the MLS Liga MX initialism, but I got to say it was a bloop single, not out of the park. For me, the first thing that popped in my head was calling it MLMex.
Boo.
Oh, God.
And then he so now let's talk soccer. He said, a combined Clausera Apertura thing in North America or something like the Brazilian League where you've got your regional tournament and then your national tournament would be amazing. CCL fever is only so contagious.
So, Ben, this is where we ask you what you think about a combined Liga MX.
Apparently, like, I would listen to this but didn't hear any of this because I don't remember what you guys talking about this.
Oh.
I mean, it was a two-hour-long podcast.
End. Yeah, you had
so I definitely spaced out while you guys were talking
How
about
would
this.
You build? If we were going to combine the two leagues in a fantasy land, how would you do it?
Not a tournament. If you want it to be or it
You're
can
saying
be a tournament.
So during league play,
whatever
Toronto FC is going to play
Correct.
Veracruz.
They're part of the same league in some way. You can get creative with it.
Oh, man, that's tough. I just don't see like –
You would be entertained, though, right?
I'd be entertained. I think just the travel, the different elevations, the it would just take a lot of out of the actual game.
So my idea was Clausera Apertura and the winners of the first tournament then qualify for this Liga MX MLS combo tournament. You could potentially even do host sites, right, where it's like you've got two groups.
It shouldn't be league play is the basic gist.
And one is hosted at
that
the Azteca.
That
kind of
sounds like something that rhymes with bro smell. I'm just saying, a little bit.
I don't know what that stands for.
I think he's trying to say pro rel, and that just didn't work out for him at all. What are you talking about?
Dad jokes. That's what happens here. None of you guys can be my nanny, but thank you to everyone for listening to this show. We end on a high note, as always, with Ben the Research Bear. Thanks to Sam Stachel for joining us as well, Gamtam and Sam. Paul Tenorio coming on Thursday. If you have questions for him, hit us up. In the meantime, enjoy your week, everybody.